WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a true throwback March Madness week here where the bracket busters are out. Poor Luke was ripping up his pools with Kentucky. Everybody wants to hire the St. Peter's coach because he's the flavor of the week and Cinderella and the slipper and all that good stuff. We're going to be getting out. We shook it at Costas, by the way, on Friday. Luke, I was all in on Delaware until they were no good anymore, right? I mean, and the St. Peter's thing had already happened, but I want to give a shout out to our friends at Goodwill Industries for helping us with our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be talking to some folks there, as well as our friends at the Maryland Lottery, letting ourselves play. Luke, I know you live in a small community and grew up in, you're like John Cougar Mellencamp, small town and all that. I walked into Costas, a little distressed because I had my 2 o'clock hour sort of blew up at last minute. Mike Rosenfeld's kid flew in from Chicago. All of a sudden I lose my guest and I'm smelling the crabs and the March Madness is up. And so, you know, I walk in and the first people I see are the Causey family. Dave Causey and I played Pop Warner football together in 1978, Bucky Dent. We were 10 years old. We then went to high school together. He was a drummer and a long-haired metal kid. He was really short. And then my dear friend Gigi met him at my house on Kane Street at a Christmas party. They didn't know each other in high school. They fell in love. I DJed their wedding. I DJed their wedding when the Mariners won a big game against the Yankees in 95 in the playoffs because I was running in and out of the wedding watching that. And DJing the wedding. And it was a Greek wedding. It was great. So the Causey family, they hit me out in their basement drinking beer in the 80s. Everybody did. Everybody's family. And they're like everybody's parents. And they were playing lottery games in the corner at Costas when I walked in, watching basketball. They're playing the Keno Sprinkler. They were like winning money, drinking Orange Crushes. Mr. Causey threatened after three drinks. He came over and started interviewing himself, Vince McMahon style, trying to get on the show with me. And I thought, you know what? This crab cake tour, what an idea, Luke. I mean, I can't believe you're missing out on this thing, man.
It's cool. I'm glad it's fun. And like I said, you know, during free agency and times like that, it's just tough for me to get away from my laptop if we want to be sending out the text alert and all that. But it's great meeting people and getting back to doing pre-COVID things like watching March Madness in a local establishment, bending back a few cold ones and rooting against Duke, right? I guess Sunday with Sparty not being able to get it done, a great basketball game, but Michigan State fell apart at the end. But you know, at least you get to root against Coach K at least one more time, right?
Yeah, I was watching Jay Wright, you know, sweat a little bit, you know, for a couple of minutes. And, you know, I have a great heckling incident with him. Have I told you this one?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God. You know, oh, this is great. So, and while I'm wearing black and gold to honor Towson, and, you know, to honor Pat Scarry, I had a great year and obviously didn't, you know, go their way in the tournament. But I went out to Towson. I don't know. Google whenever he was coaching at Hofstra, whenever that was, right? And they played Towson, and it was a big deal on a Tuesday night. And then, you know, there were 1,100 people out there, whatever. But I decided to sit courtside and just have some fun at the basket, but just be fans, just have a good time. I mean, this is when it was you were allowed to have fun, right? And it wasn't anything mean-spirited or even Robin Ficker, who got disbarred again, I guess, right? After all those years, I sat down at Bullets games where he's holding up dead chickens for Charles Barkley and whatever phallic things he did down at courtside. This was nothing like that. This was just me heckling him. I was calling him Calipari. I mean, I just kept calling him Calipari. And it just like over and over and over and over again. And I got a couple of winks out of him and he was fun. And, it, you know, and I know people that Villanova people like all that. But I have a little background with this and having a good time and being a part of the pep band. And I've done a lot of March Madnesses. This one's pretty good one, right? I mean, got a real Cinderella, got good stories. But the backdrop of this one, unlike – literally, and I'd have to think my whole lifetime, right? I go back to Lefty, Bob, Gary, and then Turgeon, right? There hadn't been a whole lot. We're talking about the Steelers colors and my Costas. By the way, it's the 50-year anniversary, and Pete told the most amazing story about his father that I didn't even know. You have to sit over crab cakes the size of my head that my wife and I consumed last night from Costas to hear these, you know, old school stories about stuff. But I can't think of anything where there's ever been a March Madness where the backdrop has been who was Maryland going to hire. And then in the middle of the games, the leak, and then Don Mueller's got an opinion. Jeff Mueller's got an opinion. Bruce Posner's got an opinion. Luke Jones has an opinion. Joe Enoch, everybody has an opinion. I just this is different. And I think we knew it would be different, but this is uncharted territory for Terps people. We've had tragedy in Len Bias. We've had all sorts of things, but a coaching search on when I got brackets out, weird. And I can gamble on the games too. That's also part of this too, right?
Well, and it's a coaching search that's gone on for months. I mean, Mark Turgeon quits, what was that, right around Thanksgiving, you know, which that's weird in and of itself. And then, you know, you consider where they are as a program and where they're going. And let's face it, short of, and I'm glad you mentioned Jay Wright, short of hiring Jay Wright, which was not going to happen. I mean, Jay Wright has built an empire at Villanova over the last two decades. By the way, he was at Hofstra from 94 through 2001. So it's been a minute. It's been a while. He's been at Nova for two decades now, right?
You know what it was? I mean, now that you've given me the date on this, and I'll be really honest, Mike Jaskolski became a really good friend, still is a friend, right? And went on to be an assistant. He was at Miami and, you know, went various places. He had a coaching tree. And a great guy. I love Jazz. Jazz literally would come over to the radio station, put his feet up and do the morning show in that era off season. And like this week after he's eliminated, he would just come over and like hang out and talk about hoops for a couple of hours on a Tuesday afternoon and would literally hang out. And because it was a mile and we were in business with Towson, the old days, when they did business with local people instead of corporate whores. I remember going to the games and having fun with it. It was lighthearted, but I mean, I knew the coaches, and of course, Terry Truax was like family to me. You know, I have handwritten notes from Terry to me on John Wooden stuff that just means the world. I mean, love college basketball, love what it used to be and what it used to, I don't know what the hell it is anymore, right? And I has all the stuff going on, but I do know that there's big business and Maryland's missing out on it or feels like they're missing out on it. And there needs to be some level of recruitment to this city for them of humans outside of the realm of the people from New York that come down and maybe live in the area, go to school there and buy tickets. They need a resurgence of energy. They need those Billick billboards that Loeffler put up back in 99, right? They need something like that. And I don't know if this is that, but I do know it sort of has overshadowed whether you had Kentucky on your pool or not at this point for everybody. I mean, the Maryland community, what's out there left of it or people that love Maryland that don't go to games. And I'll talk to Mueller at length because he and Jeff have a whole thing with Maryland, and I have a lot of Terp. He a Terp, she a Terp. You know, I sing the song Drunk at 3 in the Morning with Terps, people at Super Bowls. I mean, I get it. I have not been recruited to it. And I had an assistant coach down there that I coached when he was 11 years old, and Bino Ranson, who's now been run off. I don't know anybody down there. And you and I have been treated like garbage when we've been involved, and I'd love for all that to change, but I don't know where the enthusiasm would be. And I don't know what anybody would be excited about, to your point, if it's not Jay Wright.
Yeah. And that's where I find it to be interesting how a search goes. You know, you hear different names. I mean, last week at this time, the big name that was being talked about was actually Mike Bray, who I would have loved to have been the hire to replace Gary Williams 11 years ago, but Mike Bray being where he is, I think 63 years old, you know, clearly someone has some roots to Matha and from the area, coached at Delaware years ago, but you know, the age, you know, would that have made sense? So, you know, I mean, Kevin Willard's a name that had been talked about a lot, you know, really from the time that Turgeon left, he was a name that was mentioned. I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you, I think this is a great hire or that this is going to be a bad hire. I don't know. I really don't know. And I don't think even people who are plugged in far more closely than I would be, they can't know at this point. I think there are a lot of variables at work here. I will say this, for as much as you kind of think back to Seton Hall and think back to the days of PJ Carlissimo and the Pirates losing to Michigan and Glenn Rice in the national championship game, That was a long time ago. And since then, Seton Hall hadn't had a whole lot of prosperity, not a lot of relevancy. I mean, you go through the list.
Had a couple of good baseball players back in the days, I remember.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But you go through, I mean, Tommy Amaker, largely a 500 coach there. Lewis Orr, 500 coach there. Bobby Gonzalez. And you know, by the time Kevin Willard got there, you know, right around the same time Mark Turgeon arrived at Maryland, you know, Seton Hall had been a complete afterthought for a long, long, long time. So, you know, in the Big East, and of course the transition at the Big East, just like every conference has gone through as it relates to realignment, teams coming and going. But, you know, Willard's built that team into a team that was making the NCAA tournament what would have been five straight years had the pandemic not canceled the 2020 tournament. Now, on the flip side, you look at what he has done and you say, okay, he's built Seton Hall into a team that's made the tournament consistently, which sounds, you know, a little bit Mark Turgeon-like in terms of making the tournament most years, but he has a 1-5 record in the NCAA tournament, which is not going to inspire outsiders looking at his body of work. So the question then becomes, had he reached his ceiling because of just what Seton Hall is, their resources, how their competitors, all of that? Was that a case of that program reaching its ceiling, or was it a case of Kevin Willard reaching his ceiling? And that's going to be the big question here. Look, we can talk about coaching style, X's and O's, all of those different things. It's really going to come down to this. Is he going to be able to recruit this area? And when you mention Baltimore, it's not just Baltimore, it's DC also. So a big part of this is going to be, who does he hire to be on his staff? Who does he hire that has some significant footprints in this greater Baltimore, Washington area? Because, you know, we've seen the times where the Terps have been able to recruit better in this general area. They've had some success, but there've also been times, and this was something going all the way back to Gary Williams way back when, you know, a big criticism of Gary at times was not keeping guys in his own backyard. So that's really what this is going to come down to. And to sit here and try to say that I know that it's going to work or I know that it's not going to work, I don't know that. The reality is, as much as I do think there is a lot of potential for this to still be a great job, and I'm not going to give up on that, and that's why I had no problem being critical of Mark Turgeon and can't say that I had any, you know, any bad, sad feeling of him deciding to move on, because I think, you know, it was,
oh my
to me,
God,
it was,
he quit in the middle of the, I mean, like, oh, at but the I end just of mean, the day, just that decision alone is like, dude, you got to go. That's fine.
There were exactly. There weren't too many people torn up about that, is my point. But there's also the reality of, this is a program that, let's be very fair here. And I say this as someone who has all the affinity in the world for Gary Williams. The program wasn't moving in a great direction even in the last 6 to 7 years that Gary was in charge. So you're talking about a long period of time here, 2 decades now, since the Terps cut down the nets in Atlanta. It's been 20 years. You know, they just celebrated the 20th anniversary of that. So it has been a long time. So from that standpoint, there is that question of, what could you have conceivably expected? Do I think this can be a great job and a great program again? Yes, I do think that. I do believe that. If I didn't think that, I wouldn't be sitting here trying to say that, or I wouldn't have been complaining about Mark Turgeon for the last 5 or 6 years, quite frankly. That said, it's been so long since it's had that sustained power type success where, you know, obviously back-to-back Final Fours, but even go back to the 90s with Gary getting to 4 or 5 Sweet 16s, you know, where they were in that territory. I mean, one Sweet 16 for over a very long period of time. You know, go back to 2003, the year after the Terps won it all. I mean, that's what we're talking about. Well, you watched the Michigan State Duke
game, right, where there's this legendary thing happening and a great game and all that stuff.
Right.
And you're like, oh, we used to play there. It's a little Orioles-esque in that, oh, we sure used to be compared to the Red Sox and the Yankees, and now look at us. And once you fall out of that, it takes you a long time to ever get back to that, especially when it has to be built the way they're building it these days. Because you can talk about Krzyzewski, and I had Ian O'Connor on, who wrote a book about all of that. That's over. The John Thompson thing, that's over. The, you know, the lefty way and the Gary way, that's over. I mean, heck, the Izzo ways. How is this going to be done moving forward? I don't know, but I know they're in the Big Ten. There's a lot of money at stake, and they need to sell tickets. They need to get interest that does not exist, that's never existed. And people like you and me that want to be interested, they need to figure out a way to get a 50-year-old guy and a 40-year-old guy to be interested again, and then get their kids interested and get your niece interested and other people interested. And they've done a really poor job over – I've been on the radio 31 years here, and I would say that – from the beginning of my career, my interest in the Maryland Terps and my love for the Maryland Terps went into it in the 90s, and it peaked at the end of the championship, and then it came crashing down with things that happened with Ralph Friedge. I mean, I had a great night at the Orange Bowl. I had a beautiful night beating Kansas down in Atlanta before I had to come back for Oatmeal. I have memories of people I've met along life's highway that I don't see anymore because of the Terp stuff. And you and I got in cars on snowy-ass days and rolled down there when it's 12 degrees to see Iowa. I mean, I have pictures of us trying to figure out where to get our press pass and which way in traffic we're going to go. And then just deciding like, nah, you know, I mean, like to some degree that's been you and me, but that's by and large, all these people that are all up in arms about the Terps, they're not people that get in their car up Bruce Posner aside. Cause Bruce is different. He goes down and I'll have him on this week too. And he'll be on, you know, all morning and all afternoon on Monday for, you go to terptalk.com and learn about Bruce, but we have real Terps people around here. And I don't know that this is the thing that gets them excited. And I don't know that a recruit would get them excited at this point. They had Diamond Stone, you know, they've had those kinds of players. And when you get those kinds of players, you get what Mark Turgeon had. When you find that a guy that Coach K didn't want around, maybe isn't going to work out so well for you either.
Well, and I think this is where you just made the point. This is where again, I'll go back to what I said. Recruiting's going to, that's what matters. And I mean, Kevin Willard doesn't have like obvious in market roots, but he can hire people who do. And that's going to be critical, and it's going to be bringing talent. I mean, ultimately we can talk about marketing and outreach and all those different things, and those things matter. Don't get me wrong. They matter. But what matters most? Winning, having a program that's in the top 25, having a program that's getting back to Sweet 16s, having a program that isn't going to be a Final Four contender every year, because Maryland was never that, but having the possibility of what happened in 2001, 2002 happening again. I think that is possible, but there's a lot that goes into that. And you know, going back to the Willard hire itself, Maryland is so far removed from that, that not to say that they couldn't hire a good coach and find someone that couldn't become a great coach here. And that's what they're banking on with Kevin Willard, doing what he did at Seton Hall, but then taking it to the next step and winning NCAA tournament games and being a top 25 program and having a top 15 recruiting class and using the transfer portal effectively and understanding, you know, that the region and AAU and what NIL means for, you know, college sports going forward and all those different things. But Maryland was not in a position where they were certainly not going to get someone who was already at a great gig to leave that great gig to come to Maryland. And that's where you do look at someone like Kevin Willard and say, were you going to do much better than that? Okay. Could it have been Mike Bray? And yeah, Mike Bray 10, 15 years ago had a resume that you were way more excited about, but Mike,
you know,
Bray
why
hasn't...
I was excited about Mike Bray? Not just because he came on the show back in the day, because Delaware played down here back in the Jay Wright Hofstra days, right? Telling old Nest, get up on Uncle Lefty's lap. Let's tell some old stories around here about Terry Truax in the old days, Tom Sullivan. For me, with him, he got street cred the last time Springsteen played the Royal Farms Arena. He was sitting about 6 feet away from me, and he knew every word to every song. And he was on his feet dancing as though like he didn't care anybody was staring at him. He was having as much fun as I was. And that's hard to do. I mean, you've hung out with me. And so Mike Bray, for me, Springsteen fan, you know, like I gave him a high five on the way out and you wished him well. I think he was in Notre Dame at the time, you know. So, you know, anyway, that's my Mike Bray story. That's why I would have hired him. You know, that's my stupid story about why he's better.
Yeah, but look, like I said, if Maryland goes full out blitz to get him a decade ago to replace Gary Williams, I would have been all in on that. But because he is from Bethesda and he did go to DeMatha and he does have roots
I bet here. He likes Springsteen too. I'm going to find out if they ever put him on a show with me.
But he's 63 and is a 63-year-old coach not knowing how long he's going to be there. Is that going to be recruiting 17-year-olds? You know, and that's part of this. You know, you have to have a lot of energy. I mean, this is why Gary Williams, late in his tenure, why the program fell off. Gary did not have the energy or the taste or the palate for playing the AAU game. So, you know, the job, it's not easy.
Well, by the way, Georgia didn't have the taste or the palate to fight with the fan base. I mean, literally, right? I mean,
that's a full-time
job for a lot of guys with their wives and kids and stuff.
Yeah.
That's real. I'm not the one to poo-poo that. I'm the one to say that stuff is real. And fighting with the fans is just,
although
you can only do so much of that. And then it falls apart.
Sure. Although I definitely took some issue with how some of that was characterized as though like Maryland's this heavy-handed, over-the-top, unrealistic expectations that this guy was like, verbally abused or something like that. You know, to me, it was more a case of then don't take the Maryland gig if you're not, you know, if you're used to where your previous stops and you're not accustomed to high expectations, then don't take the gig to begin with. And maybe, you know, in hindsight, a decade later, maybe that's really what the remedy was. But you know, we're going to have to see how this goes. And like I said with Willard, I mean, who's he going to hire for his staff? And how much support is he going to get from the administration? And, you know, as much as we want to talk about these coaches, there's someone that hires them. And go back to Kevin Anderson, Randy Etzel on the football side was an utter disaster. Mark Turgeon, certainly not anywhere as disastrous as Randy Etzel. But was Mark Turgeon the guy to transition from Gary Williams and take Maryland back to where it had been? Clearly not, because it didn't happen. Turgeon wasn't terrible, but it wasn't. You know, this is an area where you need to be big time. You know, I mean, it's one thing to win in Durham, North Carolina, or go out to Kansas and Bill Self, but you're right smack dab in the middle of two major league markets, and if you don't win. It's not even that people are mad. They just move on and they're not paying attention to you. And that's been the issue.
The football team can't win, right? Because Ohio State's too big and these other places, Michigan, it's a different thing. Basketball, they need rivalries that don't exist yet, right? Like you wanted to have this thing with Izzo and down here because they're sort of the big bad beast of that. And, you know, here comes Ohio State's whack-a-mole because there's so many teams. None of them are ever really dominated. I don't think of – they're not basketball schools. They're football schools. Purdue maybe, right? But all that being said, there's part of this that you want to create something – on the other side of the ACC, even the way people feel about Coach K playing four more days, he's 100 years old, you know, these things, you know, but rooting against him and having that bad guy like the Yankees or Red Sox or whatever, they're the Steelers in our case or whatever it is, there is something missing there. And there's something about you having to be a big dog for a period of time. And look, you and I went out to Purdue and saw a game. You and I have gone to a lot of Terps games together. I mean, like literally across the Big Ten, I bet we've seen almost every team in the Big Ten together at some point over the last 10 years down there. And I feel like there's an identity issue that the whole conference may have on a basketball side that he's now coming into this thing. And it's not big enough for some people to say, well, he came from Seton Hall. And I look at it like he's a lifer basketball coach, son of a coach, like all that. He's got all these credentials to be able to coach basketball. I wouldn't question any of that. And knowing how the game's played and being a part of it at big schools like these places he's been. But will it work? I don't know. I mean, there were 68 teams on your bracket last week. Now there's 16. If you're not one of them and you're St. Peter's, you're Kentucky's no good this week, right? Anybody that lost is no good because that's the way this is judged at this point. And even with Turgeon, it wasn't good enough. And look, I'm in the scope of things, like the next, what this guy's going to be versus Turgeon, I don't know if he'll surpass that. I had those questions about Harbaugh after Billick, right? And Harbaugh's done a fine job, or right? He's on the Hall of Very Good at this point. This guy, at least getting out of it, I don't know that the program's in good shape. I don't know that Gary left it in awful shape. And there was the transition of all of that. And Turgeon did a pretty nice job for a couple of years of getting good players in here at various points. This is sort of feels like Mike Elias finding it burning on the side of the road a little bit. And that's the weird part for me is what can he instantly do here over the next, because expectations are going to shoot up because you can just go grab kids now, right? Like nobody's got the Deshaun Watson deal in college basketball, right? Somebody smells the grass, it smells playing time and bright lights. You can go out and be as nefarious as you want to recruit them at this point, right?
Yeah, and that's where it's going to be interesting to see, you know, with the transfer portal, can he bring in a couple players to make the program decent year one? You know, I mean, you certainly don't want to be in a position where you're 10-20 and right off the bat, even if you have a good incoming class, but they're just not ready for big time quite yet. So, you know, how does that work? As I mentioned, I mean, his staff's going to be so important. You got to have some people who know this area, can recruit this area. I mean, he's 46 years old. You know, he's going to be 47 in April. You know, so you have a coach who has been around, but is not, quote, old in the way that, you know, as I, you know, kind of mentioned, with no disrespect to Mike Bray, but just what the perception would be if you're hiring someone who is that far along in their coaching career. But, you know, you've got to try to capture the imagination and the attention of this area. I mean, that was the big thing. I think as much as Turgeon had his detractors, I think the bigger problem was how many people just weren't paying attention anymore. I think it was apathy much more than anger. And that was something that when Turgeon came in 2011, there wasn't nearly as much of that. Now, Maryland hadn't been as good, and Gary had had some years where they missed the tournament and some lean years. I mean, they had the Vasquez team, which, you know, Corey Lucius and Michigan State pre Terps going to the Big Ten, breaking their heart. But, you know, it had been several years where it wasn't what it had been a decade before that. But at the same time, that memory was still fresh. Now you're talking two decades later. You're talking 12 years now, even since Gravis Vasquez and that team.
Wow.
So, you know, it's been a while. So that's why I said, for me, the bigger concern was not people getting ticked off about Mark Turgeon. It was more so people just not being engaged at all anymore. So in Kevin Willard's case, do I think he alone, that hire alone, is going to attract more eyeballs? No. But if he can recruit some good players and use the transfer portal effectively, and, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talk about Maryland with their basketball only practice facility and all that. I mean, all the different things that you think about big time programs doing, you know, I still think there's a path for Maryland to get back to where they were two decades ago, two and a half decades ago, but it's going to take a lot of work. And again, it goes back to that question of Kevin Willard, what he did build at Seton Hall. Clearly they hadn't broken through to the point of not just getting to the tournament, but getting to the second weekend, Sweet 16, Elite Eight. They hadn't had any of that. He's 1-5 in the tournament. So the question is, again, had he reached his own ceiling as a coach, or was it a case of reaching the ceiling at Seton Hall? Certainly the Terps are betting on it being the latter, and this guy now taking it to the next level. And again, let's face it, short of, you know, hiring Jay Wright, or, you know, some people, I guess, Rick Pitino was a name that a lot, you know, just because it's a name, right?
Imagine.
But I'm just saying, it's a name like that, you know, but if you're going to attract people, those are the types of hires that were never going to happen. So that's where, if you're Kevin Willard, you have to really come in and be ready to work your behind off, because there is a path, but it's going to take a lot of work, and you need a couple home run hires for your coaching staff. And he needs the administration to give him everything he needs to be successful. And, you know, you got to get lucky. Much as we talk about all this, I still think back to Gary Williams in the early 90s and where the Terps were with NCAA sanctions and, you know, on the back end of losing Len Bias and Lefty quitting and Bob Wade and all of that. You know, I think back to getting Keith Booth and Joe Smith, and you kind of think about what those two guys went. Keith Booth, as far as being a, you know, the local Baltimore boy, and Joe Smith just being this national player of the year that took Maryland to heights where no one would have even dreamed two or three years before that, and how Gary gradually built on all of that. You got to get lucky with a couple. You got to get a couple big time recruits coming in here early on in Kevin Willard's tenure. And if that happens and you can get to a Sweet 16, maybe not next year, but the year after that, then you've got a chance to start building some momentum and try to get this thing rolling downhill in a good way, where you know you're building that momentum and snowballing and adding recruits and you're getting people to buy in and you're recruiting Baltimore and DC and keeping some of the, we know there's a lot of talent here, but it's always been a challenge. And I think it's a challenge. I think it's a challenge everywhere to some extent. Some kids just do want to leave and go away for college, but there's so much talent that the kids who are willing to stay, you got to get them. You got to get them signed and in the door and to buy into Maryland basketball. And if you do, then I think Kevin Willard's got a chance to succeed. If not, then it'll probably be something that looks very much like Mark Turgeon, and then it'll feel much more like that ship has sailed and Maryland's never going to be what it was 25 years ago. And, you know, hey, they wouldn't be the first program that's gone through something like that. There have been plenty of programs. Go back, look 60, 70 years ago and see who was a powerhouse, and it's not the case anymore. So, you know, there's nothing guaranteed here. But again, given all the circumstances, I'm just not really sure anyone could have expected much better than Kevin Willard. That doesn't mean I love the hire. Doesn't mean I dislike the hire. I just think you did have to be a little realistic as far as where they are. And hopefully you've got someone who's ready to grind, ready to work, ready to have thick skin about criticism and things of that nature, and ready to get this thing back to where it was 15, 20, 25 years ago, because it was a heck of a lot of fun. And if they can do that, then it'll be up to the school, the administration, to continue to grow your audience and recruit more people to come out and watch. But you got to win. You can only give away so many t-shirts. I mean, we've seen this with the Orioles. You can only give away so many t-shirts and things of that nature before people just, you know, they come in and they get the bobblehead and then they leave immediately. Believe me, I've seen that firsthand. So, you know, I mean, that's just where it is. And we'll see if Kevin Willard is up to the job.
Big appreciation to our friends at Wise Markets for the Wise Comment. There's some wisdom there. You know, just give the bobbleheads, because we have seen that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We have baseball season in play. Luke and I will be discussing some spring training activities. Also, I'm going to at some point talk about my relationship with John Clayton and his passing this weekend in regard to some NFL stuff. I'm going to be at the NFL owners meetings this weekend, so I'm sure there'll be some conversations about that amongst other things. So lots of things going on around here, including the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Letting ourselves play this week at Fadley's. Got a whole roster of places we're going to be, confirming Greenmount Station in Hampstead. Also confirming with a hot dog, I might add. Maybe have a hot dog with a crab cake. G&A Coney Island Hot Dog up in White Marsh. My friend Andy, my lifer friend Andy, opened his new place. He's got a line out the door. I had some, had a Western omelet there in White Marsh on Sunday. We're going to be having a crab cake there in April as well. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, letting ourselves play. Luke can be found, Baltimore Luke, at Baltimore Luke, out on the social media places, as well as Luke at WNST.net. I am Ness. I'm in all those places as well. Big week ahead here. Really big week. Just a lot of stuff going on around here. A lot to talk about, including Terps basketball. Did we just do 40 minutes on Terps basketball? Oh my God. They're almost relevant.